Okay, so I'm in the fortunate position of following Paul Aspinwall, who already talked about heterotic F-theory duality. And he did a very careful job of describing the parameters, describing the general nature of the correspondence. I assume most people were there. I'll review things quickly, but it will be quickly. And I will focus more on what we can say in some detail about the actual comparison of the moduli spaces that you get in heterotic and F-theoretic compactifications. So the general picture is that we have on the heterotic side, among other moduli, we have a Calabi-Yau Z, which I will always take to be elliptically fibered over a base S, and we'll say, let's say that Z is n minus 1 complex dimensional. And we also have a bundle over Z. It's a principal G bundle where the group G can be either E8 cross E8 or spin 32 mod Z2 or some subgroup of either one of those. I will work only with the E8 cross E8 case. On the F theory side, the objects that are supposed to be dual to the elliptically fibered Zs are going to be doubly fibered. They will be n-dimensional Calabi-Yau's X, fibered over the same base S from the heterotic theory. The fiber is now a K3, which is itself elliptically fibered over P1. So there's an intermediate object Y between X and S. So Y is a P1 bundle over S. The cases that are most relevant to the physics are when the dimension n is 2, 3, or 4, so you're compactifying to 8 or 6 or 4 real dimensions. Mathematically, I find the most interesting case to be the middle one, where n is 3. So that S is just a P1, and then Y is a Hirzebruch surface, one of the Fn, the P1 bundle over P1. And X is a Calabi-Yau threefold, while Z is a Calabi-Yau twofold, also known as a K3 surface. So it's an elliptic K3 surface over P1. So I will talk mostly about things that are interesting, mostly in three dimensions, although practically everything I say will work in arbitrary dimension. And in fact, there's a strange aspect to the mathematics of the story, which is that you never seem to really use in a serious way the fact that your spaces are Calabi-Yau. So basically everything I say will extend to any elliptically fibered object in any dimension. So the dimension n can be arbitrary so that you can compactify to negative real dimensions if you wish. Yeah, so the reason that it is more interesting is because you get a richer structure. You get an integrable system. So you get non-trivial stuff, both in the base and the fiber. I'll explain this in a minute. Along the fibers, you get abelian varieties or complex tori, and in the base, you get an interesting moduli space. If your dimension is 4, then these abelian varieties are zero-dimensional, so they just become a finite set of points. So you lose a lot of the pretty geometry, although the formal statements will still work, so that finite set of points will correspond to some finite set of points on the F-theory side. But that was really a statement of personal taste, not of any substance. So let me start with the best-known case, the only case that's completely known, which is the 8-dimensional compactification. So that's the base of the point. Yeah, that did not work too well, did it? All right. Let's try this. What do you say now? Okay. So in 8 dimensions, it's well known that all these theories have the same moduli space. So the heterotic moduli space as well as the F-theory moduli space are both given by this double quotient of O to 18R mod maximal compact and discrete. Now, the first thing to notice when you try to, if you try to describe this in an algebra geometric way, is that the isomorphism is not algebra geometric. It depends on quantities which are complex analytic and not algebraic, such as the periods, things that have infinite monodromy. So there is no way to just start with a K3 and produce an elliptic curve, or start with an elliptic curve and produce an elliptically fibered K3. The data really depends on non-algebraic parameters, such as the dilaton, whatever. So nevertheless, there is a way to relate the elliptic curve and the K3 due to Dave Morrison and Kumar and Vafa. And that goes as follows. You write your surface X, right? So X is now an elliptically fibered K3. We write it explicitly in Weierstrass form, y squared equals x cubed plus xf plus g. And now f and g are sections of appropriate line bundles on the base P1. So you expand them in terms of a parameter t into f equals summation f it to the I, and similarly for g. And then the proposal is that z will be given by the middle terms. In other words, you just read off the equation y squared equals x cubed plus x times f4 plus g. The constant term will be g sub 6. And in fact, this proposal shows you how to start from an elliptically fibered K3 and find an elliptic curve. Can you find the bundles? It turns out that yes, you can. So that proposal was, I guess, an add-on to Morrison-Vafa, proposed by Friedman, Morgan, and Witten. What they say is roughly the following. Now that we've written down the middle part, let's look at the top and bottom part. So let's let X prime be given by a similar Weierstrass form, where now in F prime you go from 0 to 4, and in G prime you go from 0 to 6. So you're taking the bottom half of the equation. And for F prime and G, for F double prime and G double prime, you take the upper half, from 4 or 6 up to the top. And that gives you, either one of these gives you the equation of a Del Pezzo surface. So it's elliptically fibered over P1 with half as many branch points, singular points, as the K3 would have. That gives you a Del Pezzo surface, which is a rational surface. You can describe it abstractly, starting from P2, by blowing up 9 points. Actually, technically, this is not called a Del Pezzo surface. If you blow up 8 or less points in P2, that's called a Del Pezzo. So this is just the limited case where the anti-canonical bundle is not positive anymore. But I'll call it the Del Pezzo anyway. So there are two contradictory statements on the slide. One says that the correspondence is not algebra geometric, and the other gives you an algebra geometric way to go between the two bits of data. So the point is that this description is not meant to work globally. It only works in that region where you don't have to worry about the t-dualities, where you have sent your, I guess, the volume of the base, P1, to infinity. And a mathematical way to see the problem is that if you're just given the abstract K3 surface here, in order to get to this, to these equations, F and G, you need to choose a parameter on P1. So you can ask what happens if you choose a different parameter. So you have a PGL2's worth of parameters, and the answer does depend on the parameter you choose. So this construction is natural only in a locus where there is a natural choice parameter on the P1. If you look at it a little more carefully, you realize you do not need an actual parameter. You only need to know where the parameter is zero or infinite. The scaling does not matter. And exactly that is given to you in this limit where the P1 the volume of the P1 goes to infinity, the 24 degenerate fibers move 12 to the right, 12 to the left. You get two marked points on the P1. Those will be the zero and infinite point for your parameter. So you can see mathematically why this procedure does not work on the interior, only at the boundary. Okay. Anyway, I am not going to be focusing on eight dimensions, as I said, but on six and fewer dimensions. So the way I would like to proceed is I will give you a very quick overview of the picture in the heterotic complexifications. Then I'll go to the F theory, talk about that in a bit of detail, and then spend the rest of the talk elaborating the picture on the heterotic side, which is where the most interesting picture emerges. So let me start with a bit of the heterotic story. So in six dimensions, for the heterotic side, we need a K3 surface and a G bundle on it. And as I said, we'll take G to be EA cross E8. So the main point that I want to make is that this is a holomorphically integrable system. There is a this entire space, MGZ, is fibered over some base where the dimension of the base is half the dimension of the total, and the fibers are going to be abelian varieties or complex tori whose dimension equals the dimension of the base. So in general, by work of Mukai, it's known that there's a natural symplectic structure on the moduli of sheaves, in particular vector bundles or G bundles on the K3 surface. So we have the symplectic structure. What we need to describe is the fibration. And what the fibration does is it sends a G bundle to the family of its restrictions to the fibers. So you take a bundle and send it to that data which is visible one fiber at a time for all fibers. And then, so the base parameterizes fiber data, so to speak. And then the fiber, this variety P, is going to be some generalized prim variety, and it will give you all the ways of putting together bundles on one bundle on each elliptic curve into a bundle on the entire family. So another way of saying it is, let's look at the case again where the base was just one point, so we have the moduli of G bundles just on one elliptic curve, and we put those spaces together to get a relative object, a family over the base S where the fiber at each point is the moduli of bundles on that elliptic curve, and then the base U of the integrable system is just all possible sections from S to this moduli space. So what we will see is that U has a geometric interpretation. It parameterizes certain types of covers of the base. These will be Galois covers, where the Galois group will be the Weyl group of, well, E8 cross E8 or whatever subgroup we're using. And there will be some additional information that you have to specify, which will be some W invariant map from the weight lattice of the group cross this cover into the Calabi-Yau Z, the elliptic fibration. There's a theorem of Loyenha, which says that this base U is a weighted projective space. You've heard about that from Witten, among others. In the paper of Friedman, Morgan, and Witten, they reprove this theorem of Loyenha. And we will see an explicit formula for how to describe the fibers. I'm sorry? Well, what I'm saying is that each Loyenha's theorem says that each MGE is a weighted projective space. Now, you need to put them together into a weighted projective bundle over S, And then you say that the set of sections of that is the projectivization of sections of the vector bundle. So that, again, is a different weighted projective space. There is actually a missing point here, which is just because each fiber is a weighted projective space doesn't say that there's a weighted structure on the whole bundle. There's work of Wertmuller, which asserts exactly that for all groups except E8, which is the one case where you really want it. And there's serious suspicion that it's false for E8. Friedman, Morgan, Witten get around that simply by disallowing certain singularities. They allow the elliptic curves to acquire nodes but no cusps, and that turns out to be enough to give you the projective structure. Anyway, what I will be saying will be mostly information about the fibers. So I'm just putting this as a quick survey of what is known, what is true about the base, but I will be focusing on the fiber. Okay, so let's move to the F-theory side. So then the moduli include a complex structure of the Calabi-Yau threefold X, as well as the holomorphic volume form, a section of H30, and the Ramon-Ramon fields, which live in H3XR modulo H3XZ. And in fact, this fiber, the Ramon-Ramon fields, has a natural complex structure. This complex manifold is called the intermediate Jacobian of X, and you just get it from the Hodge theory. Take H3X complex, which has a complex, which is a complex vector space, and you mod out by half the Hodge filtration and by the lattice. So you now have a complex torus, which looks like H3XR modulo H3XZ. And that is the right structure to put on the fiber. Now, there are papers of the Beckers and of Witten about flux, which suggest that the true moduli space ought to be larger. And what you want to do is to replace the intermediate Jacobian by a larger group, the Deligne cohomology group. It's not much larger. It has a discrete part and a connected part. The connected part is just the intermediate Jacobian, and the group of connected components is H4X integral, or rather the Hodge part of that. Those papers actually are in four-dimensional compactifications, not in six-dimensional compactifications. So at some point, this is more of a suggestion than a clear statement. But at least in four dimensions, it makes sense to extend J3 to B. And mathematically, it seems to be natural to do that in any dimension. The part that's relevant to the F-theory compactification is not the entire H2 to XZ, but it modulo the part that comes from the base. Of course, if your base is P1, you don't need to worry about anything coming from there. But well, X is an n-fold, and Z is an n-1 fold. And in any case, I'll always look at H3 and at H2, too. I mean, J3 and H2, too. The Ramon-Ramon fields? I'm not sure. G would be G4, yes.
Why is it just a duplicate?
Well, what other dimensions could you have?
H4 is all type 2.
Well, if you're dealing with a Calabi-Yau, then H4 is all of type 2. I'm just assuming that I have an elliptic fibration. So my H4 could be larger.
Well, if you're going to do a without a Calabi-Yau, you're right. You're talking about the math side and physical motivational questions are not.
Yeah, so I don't know how to answer that.
But for Calabi-Yau threefold, I mean, there is this possibility of putting them in a discrete, using a non-zero cohomology.
Sure.
Anyway, the analog of the integrable system on the heterotic side exists on the F theory side as well. So this is a theorem that A.L. Markman and I proved 5 years ago, that if you take the union of all these intermediate Jacobians or Dehlin cohomologies, whichever you prefer, over the moduli of Calabi-Yau's with an element of H30, this union is an integrable system, which means that there's a natural symplectic form on the total space, which I guess is invariant under translation by the integral lattice, so it really descends to these tori. And in fact, the fact that it extends to the Dehlin cohomology tells you various things about Abel-Jacobi maps, but I think that is going to be a little too far from the physics, so. In the fourfold case, that's what I was saying, that the theory is more interesting in the three-dimensional case, because in the four-dimensional case, you expect the H3 to be zero. So it's true because... Well, I guess I... Yeah, this theorem as it stands is in three dimensions. So I'm not sure about its analog in general. You probably need to modify it somehow because something doesn't fit. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. One more time. No, I don't need to assume primitivity. You can take all components, the primitive or the non-primitive one. You still get a natural symplectic form on the space. Only the primitive part will be relevant to the physics, will be allowed as flux.
You'll be able to map it to the heterotic side, even the non-primitive element?
Yes, the heterotic side will have an analog. You'll see in a little while. There will be an analog of the non-primitive part on the heterotic side. You'll have both objects on the heterotic side. I think it's probably not too interesting to go into details of how you construct this symplectic structure, but let me just say that essentially it boils down to the Yukawa cubic. The Yukawa cubic, when you transform it through some algebraic manipulations, end up giving you a symplectic structure on this union of intermediate Jacobians for which the fibers are Lagrangian subvarieties. I don't know. My sense is this would not be too interesting here. So let me just leave that as a general fact. So the point is, we have now integrable structures on both moduli spaces, the F theory as well as the heterotic side. So surely they correspond to each other, right? Well, wrong. They cannot. So there are two basic reasons why they cannot match. One is that they have different dimensions, because the F theory side includes all the moduli, while the F theory side gives you while the heterotic side gives you the moduli over one fixed K3, you still get to vary the K3. So those 19 or 18 parameters are missing from the picture on the heterotic side. So you can expect some relationship, but certainly not an isomorphism. And the second, and perhaps even more serious difficulty, is that the fibers of the heterotic system are abelian varieties, which means that they're complex tori where the period matrix is symmetric and its imaginary part is positive definite. The varieties you get on the F theory side are complex tori and the period matrix is symmetric, but it's not positive definite. Rather, it has Lorentzian signature. it has a 1 coming from H3,0 and an H2,1 of the opposite signature. So these are not abelian varieties. These are non-algebraic complex tori, and they cannot possibly be isomorphic to the abelian varieties. I'm sorry?
Sounds like a null reduction is in order.
A null reduction. Well, I think that's what I'm going to do in a minute. What I'm going to tell you is that both of these difficulties disappear in the same limit which we already saw in eight-dimensional compactifications. So you take your P1 base in the entire family to be large, and that is going to create a degeneration on the F side where your Calabi-Yau will simply split into the union of two manifolds of the same dimension, but each of them will no longer be a Calabi-Yau. In this degeneration, you're killing, your vanishing cycle is the H3,0. You've killed the part of the cohomology that gives you the wrong signature. Now you have a chance to match it against the heterotic side. And by doing that, somehow you're also eliminating the issue of where the K3 is. So both difficulties disappear at the same time. So the right degeneration is the one suggested by Morrison Vafa and Friedman Morgan Witten. You take the Kähler metric on the base to be large, as well as the area of the elliptic fibers of Z, which corresponds to the area of the P1 in the F theory side.
How does that get rid of an 18
modulus? Yeah, I was afraid somebody would ask that. No, I mean it's the kind of the picture somehow when you're looking at the Narayan space, you're going to a boundary component which is extremely narrow. So you're starting with a space which has a lot of parameters, but as you go up, you're forced to basically to set these 18 parameters to zero in order to be able to go to infinity. Yeah, I mean, they will correspond roughly to the Wilson lines. Well, 16 of them will be the Wilson lines. So you're going to be forced to set them to zero in order to be able to go vertically to infinity in the one direction that we are going.
If you have a ninth dimension and have a lattice of signatures 71, then you can do anything you want with it. But if you have got to compactify, there are only two discrete ways you can do it.
No, that's exactly it.
So
let me come back to this in a moment. I want first to so now I want to go through what the duality does along the base, and then what the duality does along the fibers. Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, I mean, there are different kinds of Wilson lines. There are Wilson lines along the fiber. You're getting rid of those. And then there are Wilson lines which come from the base. Those are the ones that show up in the intermediate Jacobian. So the 18 that you got rid of include 16 which come from E8 cross E8 on the elliptic curve, by taking the elliptic curve to infinity somehow. I'm not sure I'm saying this exactly right. I'm not sure that what's the right way to say. I mean, in a sense, I'm not getting rid of the K3, because you will see that on this boundary component, once I describe it, you'll see that I'm able to recover the K3, the complex moduli of the K3, from the limiting singular Calabi-Yau. also, yeah, it will appear as the intersection, exactly. So at least in that picture, I have not gotten rid of it. But on the other hand, we know that somewhere we did get rid of these 18 parameters because the dimension used to not match, and now it does match.
Okay.
The total number of parameters in the moduli spaces does match before you do this reduction. The problem is that you try to describe it in terms of vibrations by some kind of complex tori, and that description doesn't quite match.
That's right.
And among other things, there will be some kind of quantum corrections to those descriptions on one side or the other, or possibly both. But you're going to some limit which has the nice property of both turning off those quantum corrections and also removing enough of the parameters in the limit so that what's left of that integrable system structure does match.
So.
What I would like to understand is what is that limit? Is that limit of heterotic weak coupling or type 2 weak coupling or what?
I think it's
Is it harmonic large volume and type 2 weak coupling? Because you want the hyperbolic of harmonic large to be exact. So for heterotic, you make harmonic volume.
This looks like a C-magnet.
You're right.
My understanding is that neither one of them is the right.
But there are limits. You can sort of go to limits where the corrections are turned off. I mean, the corrections are different on the different subs. So you could find some places where the moduli space should be exact. Some sort of subset moduli.
Which comes in that open part of large size?
And the false hope that you expressed last week.
Well,
that's done in enough detail that will enable you to completely match the moduli space or learn about all the in other words, that would be so constraining to have matched some sort of vertical and horizontal subspace.
But I don't understand how that
happens.
Oh,
it's
type 2A that you're supporting.
Yes.
In complete detail, that's correct.
So I think I'm going to have to take the fifth on on the physics questions, since I'm unlikely to be able to answer them. Let me just point out that what's happening along the base is that what we did before in 8 dimensions, we can now do in a family. So given this Calabi-Yau in we can read off the top and bottom part. Each gives you now a Delpeter vibration over the same base. And there is a way of getting from that to an E8 bundle on the base S. On Z, which occurs in the middle terms. So I'll describe that in a minute when I get to the heterotic picture again. This picture lets you, though, get a fairly detailed mapping between the bases of the two theories. And the general idea is that if you have a locus with singularities of X on one side, you're going to see it not in terms of singularities of Z, but rather Z is going to be non-singular, and the structure group of the bundle on it is going to be reduced. And if you have an ADE singularity on this side, it'll just show up in an ADE reduction of the structure group here. And then a third way of interpreting this is going to be in terms of singularities of the astral del petto that you get. So these three pictures are exactly equivalent to each other. Okay. So the result that I have in along the fibers, which is what I'll talk about for the rest of the talk, is the following pair of theorems, really. The cycle map, the cylinder map, induces an isomorphism from the connected component of the prim variety to the intermediate Jacobian, and also from the prim itself to the Deligne cohomology. Now, for Seti's question, inside the Deligne cohomology, there's a primitive part. There will also be a corresponding primitive part inside the prim, which will be larger than the connected component, but smaller than the full thing, so I can, again, match those. So at all these levels, I can match the groups. Now, the fibers. There are some technical questions that are still missing, and I believe that they're just a matter of refining some computations. When it actually comes down to proving these isomorphisms, you end up with some massive speckless sequences that need to degenerate. And the typical terms involve cohomology over the base of sheaves whose fibers involve group cohomology of the group W acting on various representations. And you need to know that all of these vanish. And I checked about half of them by hand, and they all do seem to vanish. So I believe that they all do, which would actually give an isomorphism. If one of them turns out not to vanish, which would not be completely shocking, then that would say that this isomorphism is true on the connected part, but on the group of connected components, it would be true only up to finite, some subgroup of finite index. So the image of one, the image would, you may miss some finite piece of the answer, or at least I cannot completely exclude that at this point. Not really. I mean, I told you that I told you that my base of the heterotic fibration parameterizes certain covers, which I'm going to describe now. And for each of these covers, I'll associate to it some abelian variety.
Can we start with the cycle map?
Yeah. Let me answer that. Let me define all the terms.
Okay.
Okay, so this was a pair of talks which I've sort of combined into what I hope will be an almost seamless single talk. From now on, I'll focus only on the heterotic side, and I'll describe exactly what the base parameterizes, what these covers are, how to get the prim variety, how to get the interpretation of the fibers of the heterotic integral system. So the question, of course, describe the moduli of principal bundles on X. All I'm assuming is that X is elliptically fibered and has a section sigma. So we'll do it in three steps. First, we will really understand the answer in the case that S is one point. So we are doing the moduli on one elliptic curve. Then we'll put these into a family, and then we will describe the fiber, which will be this abelian variety. Okay. So there's an important analogy which I want to point out, because it's not only an analogy, it's also part of the answer. And the analogy is to Higgs bundles. So let's let Higgs G, S, K be the set of P's, which are principal bundles on the fixed base S, together, so that uses S and G, And then K is just going to be a line bundle on S, or maybe a vector bundle sometimes. And we're looking at K-valued Higgs bundles. So a Higgs field is this phi, which is a section over S of add P, in other words, an endomorphism of the bundle valued in the bundle K. So the original Higgs field involved K being the canonical bundle. But you can just take it to be any bundle. So the Hitchin system is another integrable system where the space of all these pairs P phi, namely the Higgs moduli space, has a natural symplectic structure, which I won't worry about. Well, it really has a symplectic structure in the case where K is the canonical bundle. But in general, it has a vibration over a certain base, and that is given simply by evaluating on phi all the invariant, all the symmetric polynomials of your group. So you get a section of the Dirac sum of a bunch of powers of K. So you think of that as just some vector space. We have a map from the Higgs moduli space to this vector space, and you want to know what is the fiber. So this is the Hitchin system, and the fiber is known to be an abelian variety, which you can describe sometimes as a Jacobian, but in general as a prim, in other words, some natural subvariety of a Jacobian. And the description is exactly the same one that I already told you I'm getting in the principal bundle picture. So a point here is going to describe a cover S tilde, and I take the Picard of that. I take homomorphisms from lambda into this Picard. So that's a bunch of copies of the Picard. So it's some big abelian variety. And W acts on both sides. I take the part that's where W preserves the action.
What's S?
S is the base. These are bundles on, principal G bundles on S.
So curve.
No, but just any variety.
But then it's not Hitchin.
It's a natural extension of Hitchin.
Okay.
No. I mean, the classical Hitchin system is the case where S is a curve and K is the canonical line bundle.
Right.
An integrable system involves a symplectic structure and a fibration by abelian varieties. The latter part is what survives in complete generality. The symplectic form will exist under various sporadic cases. Yes.
So X
S is the same S that I had there. So in a six-dimensional compactification, S will be P1. In a four-dimensional compactification, S is some surface. So we will certainly use both of those cases.
And what variable is this
tilde? Right. So, one more minute and and we'll build S tilde. What S tilde is this. Let's do it in the Higgs case first. Okay. So, the previous one or the next one? Okay. I don't think I had it on there yet. Let me just... pardon me? Yeah. Given a bundle and an endomorphism phi, look at... the set of Borel subgroups which contain your element phi. If, let's say we're in SLN.
Can we just diagonalize this phi?
let's say that we can. Let's say that locally we can diagonalize. Globally you certainly cannot. But let's say that locally you diagonalize it. So you take the group to be SLN, and you write phi just as a diagonal matrix. Then the fiber will just be all n factorial ways of ordering those n points, the n eigenvalues. Yes. So the degree... So S tilde is always going to be a W Galois cover, where W is the Weyl group. So for SLN, the group will be SN of order n factorial. N factorial full, exactly. But you'll see that is the right object in the sense that it's the one object that works uniformly for all groups, and we don't have to make give a different story for each case. At the end I'll give examples of how it specializes for SLN and for E8, which are the two most useful cases. All right. Okay, so let me just show what this looks like in the case of E8 then. Okay, so the moduli of E8 bundles on one elliptic curve can be identified with the Dalpezos. So you can identify it as the set of pairs where E is included in D, which is a Dalpezos surface where you've blown up 9 points. Well, 9 points, which are a complete intersection of two cubics in P2. So, yeah, for practical purposes, you think of it as blowing up 8 points, and then the ninth point is determined for you, because the 8 points determine a pencil of cubics, and then there's one other point, which is the intersection of the two cubics. So for moduli purposes, you're really blowing up 8 points. So that is the moduli. How do you see it? Well, the Picard group of D is obtained from the plane by blowing up 8 points. So the Jacobian or the Picard group is just Z9, right, with signature 1, 8. 1 from the P2 and 8 from the 8 things that you blew up. And then if you already have an inclusion I from E into D, then you have a restriction from the Picard of D to the Picard of E. The Picard group of the elliptic curve is basically the Jacobian of E, which is E itself, times the integers, where there you have the degree. So let's read off just the discrete part. So start from pick D, which is Z to the 9, and go to Z by taking the degree. So we just have a map from Z to the 9 onto Z. The kernel is going to be Z to the 8. That Z to the 8 comes with a natural structure, and that structure is exactly the weight lattice of E8. You can do the analogous thing for EN. For any N, just blow up N points in P2. So I happen to be doing the case where N equals 8, but it really works for every N.
Isn't that something like the realization of E8 as SO9 mod C3 and then adding up the 3 in the extension?
Well, you'll probably read about both of them in the same book. They're not exactly the same, but yeah, they're closely related.
Well, in old-fashioned, I mean, if you would, in the Hedonic language, build up an SU9 that mod out by G3, then the twisted sectors will make it into an E8.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm really doing is I'm saying that this is closer to saying that E8 is related to SU9 by the there's an inclusion between those lattices. I think that's a little closer to than the
comparison.
Right. And there's you were saying something about the comparison was D8.
I was talking about SU9.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then, yeah, then that's...
D8 will, of course, give you Z2. In this case,
right. It's a Z3. Yeah, that's what you want. Anyway, so if you have an inclusion like this that gives you a map from lambda to the to pick zero of E, to the connected component of E. In other words, if you fix a basis for lambda, that just gives you 8 points on the elliptic curve. And those 8 points are unique exactly up to the action of the vial group of the eight. So if now a degree zero bundle, an E8 bundle on the elliptic curve, if you take the, I mean, you can always decompose it into the direct sum of line bundles by a theorem of Atiyah's, basically. And again, the ambiguity there is exactly the vial group. So you actually get the isomorphism on the top line. That MTE, the moduli of T bundles on E, where T is the maximal torus in the group, is homomorphisms from lambda to E, which is what I got. And modding that out by the vial group gives you the moduli of G bundles. So MTE is the map to the isomorphism, and dropping this isomorphism gives you MGE. Okay. So if you now have a G bundle over an elliptic fibration over S, that is going to determine for you two kinds of cover. There will be an S tilde and an S bar. S tilde is what I call the camel cover. The picture that you should have in mind is that you have a family of Lie algebras, copies of the Lie algebra, moving around. In each of them, you have a maximal torus or Cartan subgroup. In it, you have chambers. So above each point, I have this chamber picture, and a point of Estilla is a choice of one of the chambers. And the vial group just moves the chambers around. These chambers are equivalent to choosing a Borel subgroup in the Lie group. So that's why I was saying something about Borel. But the picture is you have these chambers moving around. Occasionally, your element will fail to be semi-simple, fail to be diagonalizable. And there this picture fails. You don't have the chamber picture. Rather, clumps of chambers will be coalescing with monodromy. Anyway, so if we have a bundle over Z, which is elliptically fibered over S, then in particular we have a family of Delpezzos over S. In terms of that family of Delpezzo, you can get a small cover, S bar, which is a 240 sheeted cover of S. So a point there is just going to be one of the lines on the Delpezzo. The Delpezzo will have 240 lines on it. And a point of S tilde, you can think of it as a labeling of all 240 lines on the surface. In fact, you don't need to label all 240. It's enough to choose eight disjoint lines and label those, and then you get a unique label for all the other points. So if you want an explicit model for what these covers do for you, the spectral cover, which is the smallest possible cover of S, will have degree 240. It will parameterize a point of S bar would be a line in the Delpezzo over the base. A point of S tilde will be an eight-tuple, an ordered eight-tuple of disjoint lines in the same Delpezzo. So there's just a lot more information in there. So it's unwieldy, but it has the advantage that it is Galois. So it's easy to extract invariant pieces out of its cohomology. So did that answer the question?
Uh-oh.
Well, okay. At any rate, as I already said, at least in this case of E8, we have the same statement in general that you can look at the moduli of semi-stable G bundles on an elliptic curve, and you can do the same thing where you abelianize. Instead of the whole group, you look just at T, the maximal torus. So you have MTE and MGE. MTE is easy. It's just E to the R. It's R copies of the elliptic curve. Or more invariantly, it's homomorphisms from the rank R lattice, lambda, into E.
Not the degree zero part.
That is the degree zero part. So, yes. So you're right. In MGE, I get only the degree zero part because it's a very simple group. In MTE, if I really wanted all T bundles, I would take homomorphisms from lambda into the Picard of E, which has additionally the integers in it. And that would give me components. But I'm not really interested in the whole thing. Since G is semi-simple, I only want bundles of degree zero. So I may as well look just at this part of it. So you're right, that's not the exact analog of MG. It's not the moduli of all T bundles. It's only the ones of degree zero.
You're taking the E to the R, you're taking the subspace of degree zero. Is that right?
No, E to the R is bundles of degree zero. Oh. Everything here is of degree zero. You're not adding in the elliptic curve. These are E itself parameterizes line bundles of degree zero on E. The Jacobian of E is E, because we have a marked origin. So E to the R parameterizes R tuples of line bundles of degree zero. And this really is the... Well, you can think of it as the divisor of degree R, and then subtract R times the origin.
Okay.
That brings you back to degree zero.
Okay.
So what causes all the difficulties in this theory is that points of this MGE are not isomorphism classes of bundles, but S-equivalence classes of bundles. So what does that mean? That means that two bundles, which if a bundle is stable, then it is the unique element in its S-equivalence class. But if a bundle is only semi-stable, and on an elliptic curve, unfortunately, every bundle is only semi-stable, then there could be many different representatives for an S-equivalence class. So the story is that a generic class, a generic point of the modular space, has a unique representative. There's a unique isomorphism class above it. But there will be special classes above which you have many possible representatives. Among those, there are always two that are distinguished. One is the semi-simple representative, and the other is the regular representative. Let me define those. Okay, so generically I'm saying the semi-simple representative is equal to the regular representative, but occasionally they will differ. So let's define a G-bundle to be semi-simple if its group of automorphisms is... I'm sorry, we'll define it to be regular if its group of endomorphisms is as small as possible, which is the rank of the group, R. We'll define the bundle to be semi-simple if you can reduce its structure group to T, the maximal torus. So why am I using those terms? Because these are straight analogs of standard names in the group. Okay? So in the group, an element G in the group is called semi-simple, diagonalizable, if it is contained in some conjugate of the torus. Almost every element is. In the compact group, every element is, but in the complex group, you have nilpotents, which cannot be diagonalized. A regular element is an element whose centralizer, whose commutant, has the smallest dimension, R. So I'm just building very analogous definitions. So if you just think of SLMC, right? In each conjugacy class, there's a unique diagonalizable element, and there's a unique element which has which has the largest possible Jordan blocks. Those are the semi-simple and the regular representatives, and then there are various other combinations of Jordan blocks that you might be able to stick in between if you have a repeated eigenvalue. So let's do it explicitly for SL2. The only elements which are semi-simple but not regular are plus minus the identity. Their commutant is too big. The only elements which are regular but not semi-simple are the triangular matrices, the one on the diagonal. Everything else is both semi-simple and regular. The exact same picture, well, the exact analog of this, works for bundles, still in the case of SL2. The regular semi-simple bundles are of the form OP direct sum or minus P, where P is a point of E, and P is not a point of order 2. When P is a point of order 2, then OP plus OP is semi-simple, but irregular. And conversely, the ones that are regular but not semi-simple, those will not have a direct sum description at all. Rather, they will be extensions. So there's something called the Atiyah bundle, which is the unique non-trivial extension of O by O on an elliptic curve. And if you take it and tensor with O of P, where P is one of the four torsion points, those are the bundles that are regular and non-semi-simple. So you see the analog between group elements and bundles on elliptic curves. And this is exactly the analogy that I suggested in the beginning between the Higgs system and the principal bundles. That's confusing. I think the point is that you cannot represent them.
This is where you have some non-duality. Exactly what happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's all?
Yeah. And it's a very mysterious fact, as far as I'm concerned, at the moment. Edmund has something to say about it. I think he does, but he said it to me, but I haven't absorbed it. I can't reproduce it, but there's something funny about the correspondence between holomorphic structures and flat connections,
right.
Exactly at that point. And it's still true that there's a one-to-one correspondence between those things. But a better adaptive holomorphic structure to the enhanced gate symmetry that you're observing at that point appears to be to use this semi-simple model. This is
the regular model.
So Narasimhan Seshadri says, is this, they had an isomorphism between the unitary class.
You have to use the semi-simple model in order to have a flat connection. But in the case that the semi-simple and regular models differ, the regular model seems to be more closely connected to the actual bundle of
the data. So the space of regular bundles is not what enters in the Narasimhan Seshadri.
It is. Well,
every
the point is that this, Greg, let me try to say it. The space of regular bundles is isomorphic, canonically, to the space of semi-simple bundles, is isomorphic to the moduli space. All three objects are the same object. The question is, what do you put above them? Okay, what's your family of bundles? The moduli spaces are isomorphic. There's one moduli space. I'm sorry?
In plain English, we're all agreeing on the space those 2 18.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
There's no question about that. But when you go further, it is true that in order to get a flat metric, a flat connection, you must use the semi-simple model. However, it seems to be true that that's not the one that the Hayes-Wolman family, and that's not the one that reveals the enhanced gate symmetry structure, whereas the regular model appears to reveal the enhanced gate symmetry structure, even though the flat connection isn't actually defined on that model. Now,
but both of them live at the same point in moduli.
But they're equivalent in this from the point of view of algebraic geometry. They're equivalent objects.
Are they equivalent physically?
No, they're not. They're not.
Physically, you're studying the connection. So that would suggest that you must be semi-simple.
If you go to higher dimension,
I
think you can really see the distinction even in the physics. I think the kind of distinction you'll get if you go from an elliptic curve to a K3 surface, look at the tangent bundle of the K3 surface as opposed to a small instanton on the K3 surface. I think that's roughly the kind of distinction where these points are very hard to distinguish in moduli, although they're actually different bundles.
Hold on, I was talking about heterotic strings of S2.
This is heterotic. This is all heterotic.
Naively, of course, the heterotic string was started with 10 dimensions, and then we just, when we compactify, we put the Wolfson line, and that's, of course, the gauge dimension. But if we're really thinking about it from a heterotic point of view, we're doing something funny to the conformal field theory that generically has interpretation in terms of a 10 dimensional gauge theory with Wolfson lines and all that. But whenever some monocular field gets excited, whatever we hit a non-Hegelian point, there are simply non-generic degrees of freedom show up. And we are lucky in the sense that we can just continue through that point and generically we still have the same description, but of course at that point we can change that.
But that's a long story. But you say, I guess, that in the algebraic geometry itself, you could have guessed without knowing about the Frankel gas construction, the algebraic geometry is somehow teaching.
Well, I think it's related to what Freddie just said, because here's the situation in algebraic geometry. You can make family of these objects, which are holomorphic, which depend on holomorphic parameters, which are isomorphic outside of the origin, but in which you can put one or the other model or anything in between. I mean, in fact, there can be sort of intermediate things, semi-simple and regular quantum, in which you can put it, fill in that holomorphic family smoothly, any of those models. That's why they get identified in the moduli space in algebraic geometry, because you don't want to sort of assign separate points to those things. You want a reasonable Hausdorff moduli.
Right.
And both of these classes, semi-simple and regular, have this nice property that if you were to choose to use that one, it's unique, and so that gives a description to have it. Using the flat connection also gives a description to have it. But there is this little extra degree of freedom which only lives at that point.
That's the one that sits in between.
This deeply abstract thing will somehow know about Frankel gas construction.
This is pretty miracle.
Doing it really well.
Well, if it's okay, I think I better continue, or else I'll have to skip the last part of the talk. I don't know about string miracles, but I know that I am forced to deal with both the semi-simple and the regular and everything in between, because I want to go to families, and in a family, even if the generic element of the family is as nice as possible, regular and semi-simple, there will be a certain locus where things will degenerate. I can compute the characteristic classes of that locus. I cannot make it go away. So I'm going to be forced to develop a theory that includes those degenerate possibilities. Okay, over there I wrote an element of SL3, which is neither semi-simple nor... Pardon? SL3. No, in SL2 everything is either regular or semi-simple. I already told you that. Just add one more zero, and then that's neither semi-simple nor regular. And there's an analogous object for in bundles. Anyway, so the point is that, well, everybody... I think it's completely clear that a semi-simple bundle is an essentially abelian object, right? We know how to describe all of them. You just describe P bundles, which is this homomorphisms from lambda into the elliptic curve, and then you mod out by W. How do you describe the other bundles? Well, the new point that I have to make is that regular bundles or any other bundle on the elliptic curve is still reducible to some abelian subgroup. But that abelian subgroup is not going to be a maximal torus. It will be the centralizer of some non-trivial regular element of the group. You can understand these. It's a little more complicated, but you can understand them as well as the tori. You can put them into moduli spaces, and you can use those to construct moduli spaces of bundles, and that's the basic idea of what I'm doing here. So how do we construct all G bundles on the elliptic curve, the semi-simple as well as the regular ones? For every element G which is regular, I'll let capital C be its centralizer, so that's some subgroup whose dimension is the rank. Right. So what are the possibilities in SL2? Either we have a maximal torus, or which is isomorphic to C star, or the one other possibility is we take the centralizer of a nilpotent, and that is the additive group of the complex numbers. Right, so the possibilities are the additive or multiplicative group in this case. If you think about it a little more carefully, the centralizer is actually not the complex numbers, it's the complex numbers cross Z mod 2. Right? Plus or minus. The centralizer of the nilpotent is one star 1 0 plus or minus. Can people read that? So there's two connected components, each of which looks like the additive group of the complex numbers. And that's going to be crucial to us in a minute. This is the centralizer, it's disconnected. The first thing we need to do is to put together all the tori and the regular centralizers. What's the space parameterizing all tori in the group? It's just G mod N, where N is the normalizer in the group of G. The set of tori is just the quotient, right? Because G acts transitively by conjugation on any one torus, and the stabilizer is N. In fact, you can see the W Galois cover of that. It's just G mod T. That's a set of pairs of a torus containing a borel, or a torus together with a vial chamber in it. That's the W cover. So this is the unramified part of the cover. You could build an arbitrary Kammer cover out of this, because it will always be unramified. So we have to allow regular centralizers. How do we construct a parameter space for regular centralizers? I'm saying take G mod N, embed it. Where can you embed it? Well, you can embed it into the Grassmannian of r-dimensional subspaces of the Lie algebra. Namely, just a set of those r-dimensional subspaces which happen to be Cartan subalgebras, abelian subalgebras, and take its closure there. That's the wrong thing to do because it's actually too big. It gives you the right answer for SL2. It gives you the wrong answer in every other case. So what you need to do is first you take the closure and then you take an open subset in that closure of those subspaces, those r-dimensional subspaces that happen to be to contain a regular element. Not every one of them will. So that gives you a space, G mod N bar, which parameterizes regular centralizers. And again, it comes with a cover, a W Galois cover, G mod T bar, which parameterizes centralizers contained in a borel, but now it's no longer unramified. Exactly, G mod N bar minus G mod N will be the discriminant over which you'll have ramification. And the main point is that there exists a universal object. So you can think of this as some sort of a fine moduli space for bundles on E. A fine moduli space, not just a coarse one. So the data that you're parameterizing consists of bundles, P over E, principal bundles over E, together with the trivialization at the origin, at 0 in E, and together with the reduction of the structure group to some regular centralizer. So the data includes the trivialization and a regular centralizer in the group at the origin and a reduction of the structure group to that group. So it's a couple of linefuls of data, but instead of trying to construct it in general, let me show you what this looks like for SL2. First of all, what does G mod N, G mod T look like? Well, G mod N, let's start with G mod T. G mod T is you want a pair consisting of a torus and a borel. That means you just want an ordered pair of points in P1. So it's P1 cross P1 minus the diagonal. Okay? So P1 cross P1 minus the diagonal. If you forget the action of W on that, W is just Z mod 2, just exchange the two copies, so the quotient is P2 minus the conic, minus the discriminant. Right? So P1 minus P1, P1 P1 cross P1 minus the diagonal over P2 minus the conic gives you the space of toroid with or without the chamber. How do you get the compactification? Well, just the obvious thing. You add in the diagonal and the conic. So the discriminant, the things we added, is just the diagonal, which is P1. And the point is, for every point of P1, there's a unique nilpotent endomorphism of C2, which has that point, the span of that point, as its kernel and image. Up to scalars. Yeah.
So the T of the semisimple is the group of semisimple elements?
T is the maximal torus, the diagonal elements.
Okay. And N is?
In the case of SL2, N is all matrices which are either diagonal or anti-diagonal. It's all elements which normalize the torus. So it's an extension of the torus by the vial group. Actually, of the vial group by the torus.
This is the complex.
Everything is complex. Okay. And then what I'm saying is... Oh, P2 is just, you just mod out by... Yeah, SIM2. Just exchange the copy. Anyway, to get this fine moduli space, what I do is I take P1 cross P1, cross the elliptic curve. Now my vial group, Z2, acts on everything. It exchanges the two copies of P1, and it acts as -1 on the elliptic curve. So I take the quotient. What I get is actually going to be singular at the diagonal cross the four points in here. There will be four copies of the diagonal where things are singular. You need to resolve those. When you do it, you get Kodaira fibers of type I0 star. That means they have a double line and four transversal lines coming out from the four points, the four torsion points. So now you throw away the non-reduced part, the double line, keep the four lines. So you see these four lines coming out, they are going to correspond to the two components that we had in the normalizer in that case, in the regular centralizers. So you do basically the same thing for any group, and maybe the example is good enough. You just start with G mod T bar, that was P1 cross P1, cross the moduli of T bundles on E, that was just E in the SL2 case. And I'm mod out by the vial group. That gives me my preliminary version. And then I actually need to restrict to some open subset, and I blow, which corresponds to removing the non-reduced part. And then I blow it up, and the object that I get is going to be my fine moduli space. So it is fibered over G mod N bar. G mod N bar is a set of all regular centralizers. Over each regular centralizer, the fiber is just the cohomology of the elliptic curve with coefficients in this regular centralizer. So if this regular centralizer is a torus, this gives me all T bundles. This is what I wanted. And exactly over the funny points, I get C bundles. Anyway, I got all bundles. Any bundle on the elliptic curve is going to occur somewhere in here. In fact, many times, once for each way that you've labeled its centralizer. So that pretty much completes the construction of a one elliptic curve. All you have to do is put things into families, and at this point you just follow your nose. So there's a slightly technical notion that I have to introduce of a regularized G bundle. And let me just say that for half-decent bundles, there would be a unique way to regularize them, so you don't need to worry about that. And except for that point, I need to tell you what a camel cover is, finally. It's just a cover, S tilde over S, which is modeled on this cover that I had, G mod T bar over G mod N bar. So G mod T bar is, G mod N bar is a set of regular centralizer subgroups. G mod T bar, the point here is such a centralizer together with a Borel containing it. So I have one basic example of a W cover. And anything which looks locally like it, I'll call that a camel cover.
Can you use space
distinct bundles in the same ethical class refers one to different points.
I'm sorry, one
distinct more. Bundles in the same ethical class would be correspond to different points in each case.
Definitely, yes, definitely. I've added some. I've rigidified the problem, so now they will appear in different points. Semi-stable, yeah, sure. They're just of degree zero.
Yes, but yeah. You have only
Yeah, that's right. That just means bundles of uniformly zero degree. Sure. Those are the only ones that I care about for the G bundle. Okay, so finally I'm ready to state the theorem. The theorem is that the set, scheme, whatever, of regularized G bundles on an elliptic fibration is isomorphic to the set of all possible spectral data. So the spectral data consists of three bits. They consist of a Kamal cover and a way of sending the Kamal cover into the moduli of T bundles. An easier way to say it is to move lambda over here. So I have a map from the cover cross lambda to this peak knot, if the relative peak knot. Since X is an elliptic fibration over S in tensor section, this entire peak knot is just X, at least if you ignore some singularities. So I'm sorry, at some point I switched from calling it Z to calling it X. This should be a Z, not an X. So what that means is for each character, lambda, I have a map from the Kamal cover into Z. The images for different lambdas give you the different spectral covers that you can get. So for example, for E8, the 240-sheeted cover is an image of the 696 million-sheeted cover, which is the order of the Weyl group, where you take the smallest possible weight, the fundamental weight. And the third bit that you need is a homomorphism from lambda to the Picard of the Kamal cover, which is, there's some twisting involved that I'm not going to get into, but basically you want a W equivariant map. So the way you see it is by reducing it to what I've previously called the analogy. A regularized G bundle gives you, by direct construction, all these data. So we saw how to get a spectral cover or Kamal cover. We know how to embed it into Z. And we know how to get the W equivariant map. On the other hand, if you forget part of the information, if you just restrict to the base, you get a bundle on the base together with a family of regular centralizers at points of the base. So now we've completely gotten rid of the elliptic data. We're exactly in the situation of the analogy where we have just the base and a Higgs bundle over the base.
Where does the bar come from?
X is Z, yeah. I'm doing only the heterotic side, yes. Have been for the past half hour. I have to introduce the notion of a principal G Higgs bundle, as opposed to a k-valued Higgs bundle, which is what I had before, where I just drop k. So instead of phi, I just remember the centralizer of phi. And the k-valued means I actually choose a particular value of phi. So I just drop that bit. Anyway, so an old theorem, basically the integrability of the analog of Hitchin system over any base tells you that principal G Higgs bundles on S correspond to data 1 and 3. And the point is just you have to check that data number 2, the embedding into the elliptic fibration, is all you need in order to actually lift this to a bundle upstairs. And the point is that we've rigidified everything so much that your bundles have no automorphisms, so you may as well do it locally, and then there's going to be a unique way of gluing, and you just do a local computation and it comes out. So I think this is probably a good place to stop. I can give more examples if people want, but that's basically put the summary up there. Thank you very much.
Does the construction depend on the fact that it's looking at genus 1? I mean, of this space view?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, none of this would work in higher genus. Well, for one thing, it's just not true that every G bundle can be reduced to a T bundle, unless your base is elliptic. So you fail from the very beginning. You'll be able to prioritize those bundles that happen to come from T bundles, but those are very few.